Welcome. Hello. Welcome to K-Drama School. I'm your host, Grace Jung. Welcome. Welcome, welcome, welcome. You guys, oh my goodness, we're very close. We're very close to the day. I mean, it's happening, right? Tuesday, which is tomorrow, technically. I mean, if you're listening to this on Monday, then Tuesday, April 23rd, 2024, is the day that my book, K-Drama School, hits your bookshelves. Thank you. Thank you so much for your applause, you guys. Here's the book. If you're watching on YouTube, K-Drama School, A Pop Culture Inquiry into Why We Love Korean Television hits your bookshelves. It is also available on Amazon. It's available at Walmart. It's available at Barnes & Noble. It is available at all of your local bookstores. That's right. And this is internationally available. Hello. Anywhere in the world that you are listening to me right now, if you're listening, and I know you're listening, world, I've seen my data, okay? I've got listeners in the Philippines, I have listeners in China, I have listeners in Sweden, I have listeners in Germany, I have listeners all over the world, India, I have them everywhere, okay? And I know that you're listening, and I know that you listen because you love Korean TV shows and because you love me. And if you love Korean TV shows and you love me, then you're going to want to read my book, K-Drama School, A Pop Culture Inquiry into Why We Love Korean Television. Yes, please buy it. You guys, please buy this book. I think I've been freaking out the last few months because, Hollywood film industry is at a full stop and, you know, everybody is jobless or homeless or something or other. And I'm kind of in between both of those things at the moment. I do have a couple of job interviews lined up for teaching positions. That is good. Neither of them are for tenure track positions, though. Both of them for visiting professor appointments. But nonetheless, you know, if it means employment for at least 1 year, I'll accept it, you know. Hopefully that'll like get me out of my horrible financial situation at this very moment. And we'll see how that goes. I'll keep you guys posted. Please pray for me, y'all. I think I applied to at least a dozen jobs this past week. At least a dozen. I'm pretty sure I applied to more than a dozen, but just this afternoon alone, I know I applied to at least five. And there have been other afternoons where I've applied to at least five. And so if the math is correct, then I've been applying to at least 30 jobs this past week. And hopefully, you know, I'll get more job interviews. That's all I can hope for. If you are working in academia or in the arts, I feel you. I feel your pain. If you are successful in either of those arenas, hey, good for you. God bless you. All right. Good for you. We're all a work in progress, you know. And I was also thinking, like, this afternoon, today, like, while I was making breakfast and stuff, I was just thinking, like, what job is actually a guaranteed security? You know, like, even tenure positions, like, all right, like, you get tenure, that is job security technically for life, but, you know, like, you never know with these institutions. People, like, watching people work office jobs, I mean, that's not a guaranteed thing either, you know? Like, people get fired from the tech industry left and right lately. And I hear it's brutal the way that they do it. It's like these tech industries will hire like 200 people to show off in their portfolio that they're like kicking ass and they have 200 people under, you know, they have them in employment. And then when they can't meet certain quota or numbers, then what do? They just slash those jobs. Anybody who isn't essential to like coding or, you know, is in the C-suite. Yeah, all of those people get fired instantly. Like, and it's very inhumane. Like, from the way from what I've heard, the way that they do it, it's like very, very inhumane. Like they'll literally call you into a room, like a Zoom meeting, and then start firing people like right then and there. And then it's like you're fired, and then they close the meeting, and then like all the sign-ins that you had initially, they're all kicked out. It's like so messed up. Yeah, and you know, as I'm job searching, I also see like quite a few job, I don't know, like especially in media studies, like there are these departments that are looking for people who specialize in AI tech to some extent. And, you know, I have some experience in that. Like as a performer, I had to do acting for, I'm not going to say which company, but it's a major one. Like all of you would know it if I mentioned it. And they were basically coding my face, like recording my face because I'm an Asian American lady. They were recording my face and its movements and having me like emote while saying things from my own personal experience in my life, or I would make it up. So I was doing this for like 3 hours or something, 3 or 4 hours. And I got paid like, I think $100 an hour. So I think I did it for 3 hours. So it was basically not much for the amount of work that I was doing for this major, major, major company that is collecting and retaining data and most likely going to use it so that people like me will be out of jobs in the future. And the contradiction of that as a person who is living in poverty is just absurd and hilarious. I mean, like, am I going to turn down a job like that? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. They were asking, like, we're looking for people who speak other languages to do this again. And I'm like, yeah, sign me up. I speak Korean. Fucking sign me up. You know? And, like, that is where we're at. Do we know that AI is going to take over all of our service industry jobs, the ones that are already underpaid, the ones that are already very, very demanding and not most wanted, but it is highly sought after only because people don't have jobs because there's so much job precarity. Like, for instance, I applied to In-N-Out and they rejected me. The only reason why I applied to In-N-Out is because I found out that they were giving $20 an hour. All fast food industry workers are getting paid $20 an hour in Los Angeles. And that is why I applied to In-N-Out, because I wanted to work for In-N-Out. And they rejected my application. So that's where we're at. And so I have experience working in AI, and it's like, how does that translate into like an academic sphere? Like, do I just say, oh, this is like my production culture studies method as an industry worker, and this is what I went through, and this was the protocol, and this is what they were doing? And then do I sit there and critique that? I mean, is that what I do? And then do I connect that to like the bigger problematics of our society and our capitalist economy and all of its failures at this current moment that we're all experiencing? Like, you know, how I'm just like I'm a step away from houselessness. It's literally like that. Yeah, I think I have severe depression. Like, I've been hysterically crying every single day for months. And I know that I say on this podcast that I cry every day, and there are like degrees of crying, right? Like there are days when I'm crying because I'm like spiritually moved, or I make some kind of connection that is like moving me with its beauty. But lately I'm crying out of utter despair and shame. And I had to work through that a little bit. I had to wonder, like, well, why do I feel so ashamed? Because of my poverty, why do I feel so ashamed? And I realized I still have these like internalized expectations and standards that were created or constructed for me by my cultural upbringing, my society, you know, like to be a person of a certain age with a certain education, to be able-bodied, one should have a 401k and all of that shit. And trust me, I don't have any of that. And it was just generating so much shame. And it was creating this feeling as if, like, I felt as if I deserved what, you know, my current predicament or my circumstances. And You know, that's a difficult pill to swallow. It's hard to swallow that if I frame it that way, to say like, oh, I deserve to suffer like this. But like, I look at myself and how I function each day, and I work really hard every single day. You know, I write every single day. I apply for a job every single day. I exercise every single day. I pray and I meditate every single day. And it's just how it's been for the last 3 years. And I am applying for these academic jobs finally, now that the trauma of, you know, the disasters that I felt that I faced at UCLA are, you know, I'm slowly overcoming them. You know, I'm still overcoming them. I realized I'm still harboring so much like anger and hurt from the way I was treated at that university. And, you know, truth is, I might have still had some kind of job, like some kind of income, if I had stayed with them. That is the truth. It wouldn't have been a lot, but it would have been more than now, for sure. And I would have had like more teaching experience that would have definitely fluffed up my CV for sure. But, you know, what I'm telling myself now, and this is something I do believe to be the truth, is that I had to walk away. I had to walk away for the sake of my health. I had to walk away for the sake of my sanity. I had to walk away for the sake of my own self-respect. And that is very, very difficult to do for people who live with job precarity and fear. But yeah, and I had nothing lined up, you guys. I had absolutely nothing lined up, and I just had to walk away, because if I stayed any longer, my migraines would have gotten worse. My weight gain would have gotten worse. My self-loathing would have gotten worse. And I would have been subjecting myself to abuse at that institution, you know, like professors who scream and yell, students who scream and yell, people who just like make me feel like the bad person because I ask for compensation for things that I ought to have been compensated for. And all of that just went against the kinds of values that I was outlining while I was a student there, you know, like values for humanity stuff and arts stuff, freedom stuff, stuff that my professors all checked the okay box on, stuff that supposedly these professors also believe in. But based on their behavior, their choice of words and actions and tone, I could tell that none of them were on the same page as me. And I still abide by this, you know, like I have good academic mentors from my undergraduate degree, and all of them are like old as fuck and dying or retired by now. But I still think about them and I still talk with them. My graduate school academic professors and advisors, I don't talk to a single one of them, not a single one. And I was walking around this afternoon feeling like they've all failed me. And then I was like, did they fail me or did I fail myself? You know, and I was like blaming myself. But it's like, no, like they had the cushion of an institution backing and I didn't. And when a whole institution is against one weak person with like no security, they know and I know that that is wrong. Yeah. Enough rambling there. Basically, I'm just saying I'm super depressed and I'm keeping suicidal thoughts at bay. So please pray for me, you guys. I mean, you know, you don't need to call 911 or anything. I have suicidal thoughts and ideations all the time. But like when I feel this low about myself and this insecure, they're especially worse. So I'm still eating every day. I still exercise every day. I still pray and meditate every day. I still read and I write every day. So I'm staying healthy with my routine, but I am very, very depressed. I will just say that. I will just admit that and say that, because, if I don't, I feel like I might go insane. So, please buy my book. You can get it tomorrow on Tuesday, the 23rd. And oh my gosh, this I have to plug. If you are in Los Angeles, on April 29th, I have a show at the Hollywood Improv with some of the best guests that I've had on this podcast, including Zach Chapaloni, Ruby Bachmeier, and Josh Edelman. And these three comedians are super, super funny and talented. I mean, they kill. These guys are killers. They bring down the house. And when I was doing my K-drama improv game with them, they all just mastered it. I mean, they destroyed. So that's what I'll be doing on April 29th at the Hollywood Improv. The K-Drama School podcast will be doing a live recording there to celebrate my new book, K-Drama School, A Pop Culture Inquiry into Why We Love Korean Television, and doing stand-up by me and by Ruby, Zach, and Josh. And we'll be playing the K-Drama flashcard game with all three comics, and it's going to be an amazing time. So if you're in LA, you can buy the tickets. The ticket link is on my website, gracejungcomedy.com/shows, and you can scroll down to the April 29th link, and it's right there. And you can attend this show by purchasing the ticket at the Hollywood Improv website. And please come. It's going to be a great time. I will be doing book signings. I will be selling magnets. Just come and celebrate this amazing, amazing evening with me. It's going to be an amazing time. So today I want to talk about the show The Sound of Magic, which is on Netflix, and it is a coming-of-age musical with a very interesting production background. All right. First of all, it teams together writer Kim Min-jung with director Kim Sung-yoon, and they collaborated on a little show called Love in the Moonlight, which I don't believe I covered on this podcast yet. I have seen it, and it stars Park Bo-gum and Kim Yoo-jung, and it was a huge ratings hit. And, you know, that's what I find with a lot of these, like, queer-coded K-dramas that are set in, like, a historical period time. They always are ratings killers. You got queerness. You got big name stars and actors. It's set in the old timey times, like Joseon Dynasty times. And there's queer cross-dressing happening there, right there. Cross-gender play. And people love it, you know. They always love it. Like Mr. Queen, they loved it. The King's Affection, they loved it. You know, it's like a recipe for success in Korean television at this point. So there that is. So you got this writer duo, the writer director duo, and they're collaborating with two more sensational people. All right, you have K-pop lyric writer Kim Iana, and she wrote hit songs for K-pop stars like Brown Eyed Girls and IU. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, she is a hit maker. And then you have a comedian slash magician and illusionist named Yeungyeol, who also collaborated on this show, The Sound of Magic, as the on-set illusionist who taught the actors how to do magic tricks. Yeah. So you got that happening. This is like a very, very, collaborative, creative effort. You got music, you got magic, you have ratings hit makers, you know? Yeah, you got a big name star, kind of. I only say kind of because he was like really not on my radar at all. This dude, you know, Ji Chang-wook, he was not on my radar. Not in the least, but here he is. He's like, I'm like all about him these days, apparently. Like, he's doing something to my subconscious. I keep looking for him. I remember seeing Yeungyeol, the magician and illusionist, on one of my favorite Korean variety shows ever, which is My Little Television. Yeah, he used to be on My Little Television, and he always won number one. Like, almost always. I think he was, like, number two just once, but, like, the rest of the time, kicking ass. People just loved him. Loved him on that show. And, you know, like, who doesn't like magic? It's entertaining, right? You have actress Choi Sung-eun in this show, and she's very multi-talented. First of all, she has the pipes for singing. She does. Very feminine voice. And she's a great performer. Mm-hmm. She's in another Netflix Korean content with Song Joong-ki, the movie My Name is Lo Ki-won, which I stopped watching because it is way too grim. Yeah, it's set in Germany, which is cool. I'm down with that. But it's like trauma, poverty porn, refugee porn. I couldn't do it because, like, quite frankly, it's just too close to home right now. And I was like, this is like way too much of a bummer. Like, I can't work out while watching this shit. You know, I was working out. I was on my elliptical machine. I was like, I have to turn this off. But I did catch like a second of Choi Sang-eun's very versatile performance in that movie, where she plays like this foul-mouthed bad girl in that movie. But in this show, The Sound of Magic, she plays the innocent high school girl who is also like abandoned by her father. And she's also like a caretaker to her younger sibling and the breadwinner and, you know, feeling very lost, right? Feeling very discarded by society, living in poverty. And she did a great job, like a really wonderful job on this show. She kind of became well known when she was in that show Beyond Evil, which is a 2021 show. I did not see this, but it is on Netflix. I know that. I know that she got a lot of accolades and good attention for her performance on that series. I'm not sure if I'm going to see it yet because it looks a bit extreme. And I'm trying to keep my nervous system, you know, steady at the moment. You know, like this past week, I rewatched my Liberation Notes. Like, that's where I'm at. OK, like, I'm really seeking some kind of spiritual support at the time. You guys, it is a struggle. It's really hard right now. I'm not kidding. Please support me on Patreon. Jesus, if you're listening to this show and you have a couple bucks to spare, please support me on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/kdramaschool. You could be a paid supporter of me, so that I can pay for my Netflix subscription and I can pay for my website, which renews every year. And my utilities and my rent and all of those things, you guys. Please, for the love of God, I am unemployed at this time. The visuals in The Sound of Magic, they're very beautiful, okay? Korean CGI is, you can't fuck with that shit. It is marvelous. And the music's decent, all right? I needed to watch something that was like fantastical, weird, and light, and this one does the job. It is fantastical. It is weird. It is very, very weird. The story's really fucking weird, actually. I was like, oh my God, where is this going? It is so twisty and turny and weird. But I agree ultimately with the message behind it. All right. So there are some seedy moments in this show. So trigger warning for those of you who are sexual assault survivors or molestation survivors. There's a perverted man sexually harassing this young high school girl, trying to take advantage of her. And then there's a suspicion of pedophilia with the magician later on. But these are suspicions and projections rather than anything based in fact. The show does give viewers something to hold on to in terms of like hope, in terms of magical thinking, something to hold on to despite whatever harsh realities the hierarchy and authority insist on. And I think that is the essential point of this show. I'm currently reading The Queer Art of Failure by Jack Halberstam. I'm reading this book, like both audiobook and ebook, because it's an academic text. It's a very dense academic text. But I am loving the intentions behind this book, like, you know, being anti-disciplinarian, you know, like fuck grades, like fuck the authority, fuck disciplines, fuck that noise, you know, like citing Foucault, using resistance against capitalist dictates of success, using resistance to capitalist dictates of success as a form of queer method. That is beautiful. I think that is very, very beautiful. Where can we find evidence of capitalist resistance, and how can we argue that as queer? Am I existing in a queer living? Absolutely. Are you fucking kidding me? I have a PhD. And I go around like talking about my hoo-ha on stage. That's a queer existence. I have a PhD and nobody will hire me because everybody's afraid of somebody with a PhD. They're afraid of being stupid in comparison to me. If only they knew. It's also a queer existence to be an academic outside of academia. It's a queer existence to be in show business, and yet I can't comfortably say I'm in show business because I am currently not represented. Because I fired my agent, and I never got a comedy touring agent, even though I've been asking for one for years. It's a very queer existence I live in, you know? Absurdity, conflict, paradox. Oh, it's a lot. But to think about resistance to capitalist dictates as a queer method, it definitely opens my brain up to new possibilities so that academia won't feel so heavy and awful for me. Because I think part of what made me run away from the institution for so long is that the feedback from other professors was just so heavy. They were telling me how to do my work against my desire. They're like, you have to do this and this and this. I'm like, why the fuck do I have to do anything? I don't have to do anything, you say. I can do whatever the hell I want. And I'm only able to say that now because I was away from academia for 3 years. Do you understand what I'm saying? I had to learn how to listen to myself. I had to learn how to be honest and truthful to my own gut and my own happiness and my own joy and say no to these, like, people who don't know what the fuck they're talking about because they don't know what my project is about. Only I do. And this is not a confidence I would have had if I stayed in academia and continued against all of my bodily functions telling me to get the hell away. Applying for these jobs in academia currently, like, I do hysterically cry. But, you know, a part of me is excited to be working with students so that I can go in there and reassure them that there are alternatives no matter what. And I think that was like the biggest anxiety for me when I was an undergraduate. Everybody telling me, like, you're going to fail. You're not going to have a good time. It's going to be really hard for you. And that shit doesn't help. It really doesn't. But I think telling students, like, no matter what job you work, you're never going to find financial security. But you can find security knowing that you can always do whatever you want. You can work any job you want. Technically, you can. You can. That actually lifts you up and pushes you out into a place of freedom where you can make any choice and it'll be the right choice because it's your choice. Nobody has to do anything that they don't want to do. Do I believe in that? Well, yes and no. This week, I have a training for the Center of Autism and Related Disorders. And, you know, to be honest, I'm not looking forward to that. The institution that was at, it's not even an institute, it's like a building. It's this, like, really awful, awful, terribly poorly lit building with no air circulation, and it smells like shit. And because there are diapers that need to be changed and stuff. And that space is very depressing. And that job pays $19 an hour. And it's part-time. And I have to train for 3 to 5 hours every single day for the next 4 days. Yeah, from Tuesday to Friday. And I'm not looking forward to it. I'll be really honest with you. I'm not looking forward to it. It is very depressing, the thought of doing that. And so does one need to work a job that they do not want? No, they don't. I could still say no to this. I mean, part of the reason why I'm just doing this is because by the end of my training, I am ABA certified, meaning I will be able to work with children or people with disabilities. And that is a certification I actually want. I think it'll help me in the long run. I think it'll be useful to me in the long run. So that is why I want it. But the work itself and the system that it's attached to, oh my God, it is so depressing. Everybody is underpaid. They're very short-staffed. Their machine, like, their computers would not work. This is an online training, and they're making me do it in person so that they can quote-unquote monitor me. So there's, like, lack of trust over there. It is, like, it's already feeling toxic, and I'm just like, what the fuck, you know? Luckily, I have three other job offers you know, they're all tentative and pending. None of them are a sure thing. And plus, I have two job interviews. So, you know, I got things lined up. They're in the queue. You know, the message in the stars are just like, just trust. This is a decent time for up-leveling your career. So just trust in that. So, you know, I'm just going to take each day by day and go with it. You know, like the training is paid. So I have that. So, okay, let me just get back to this and wrap it up real quick. So right now, right in this present moment, magical thinking, my own magical thinking, involves balancing conformity with non-conformity, all right? So would I be conforming if I go into these institutions, like doing the ABA training, going into academia again? Would I be conforming? Yes, I would be. But is there a compromise to me and my values? No, because I continue to remain non-conformative and unconventional at the core and at my essence. And that makes me want to delve further into queer studies just so I can have more freedom of mind in the academic rigmarole. So that's all I have to say about that. Again, please buy my book. I love you all. Support me on Patreon. Please come to my show on April 29th. It'll be great to see you because I'm so fucking depressed. Take each day at a time, one step at a time, one task at a time. And it's okay to go quote unquote slow. Go at a pace that doesn't upset or alarm you and you'll still be okay. That is all I have to say. Thank you for your kind support. I love you all. Take care.